So, good morning. Thank you for coming, and I apologize for the delay. I had everything saved on two different USB drives, and nothing was read by the Mac. I think it was revenge from Apple when I returned the iPad at Costco. My name is John S. Tamaresis, and my parents did not know about R when I was named. I'm a statistician here at the university, and I work in the Department of Biomedical Data Science. I'm honored to be the moderator for this session. We have four wonderful speakers. The first will be Alex Kotze, who's an applied researcher at eBay. And also, if you can, since this is a sponsor presentation, which means that eBay was one of the sponsors that contributed to making this conference possible, if you could all navigate to eBay and purchase something, I'm sure we would all appreciate it. So on that note, I'd like to introduce Alex Kotze as our first speaker.
Thank you for the introduction. I appreciate that. I will definitely appreciate if you guys go to eBay. And so probably I don't need to introduce eBay to you. And for full disclosure, I think on the schedule, my talk should have been in this bright red of tainted presentation. For some snafu, probably still blues, but so I want to have full disclosure. If you come here to expect to hear from me, be aware, I work for eBay. eBay sponsored this conference, so imagine that the thing was red in your schedule. Good? Anybody wants to leave or you still want to stay? Okay. So as I said, I probably don't need to introduce eBay to you. I hope everybody either used it, bought something on eBay, maybe even sold something on eBay. What you might not know is whenever you go to eBay and run a search, you're actually running a gradient boosted tree model that was trained in R and is running real time of thousands and millions of documents. So that's the way actually we train our ranking function in production is using R. And eBay is in almost 20 years of existence had accumulated a tremendous amount of information. We have information about our user, about our buyers, about the listing, about the product we're selling, about the shipment where this product are, about the feedback. So there is a tremendous amount of data. It's an amazing amount of data. And even more amazing is how little we did so far with it. eBay is increasingly getting more technological and sophisticated, but we really only scratched the surface of making use of this incredible amount of data we have for a lot of interesting purposes, either from research or for actual application. And as you can imagine, when you have a almost complete virgin territory, exploration is very important. There is a lot of questions that you might have, and we actually looked into that, and either out of personal curiosity or because there is a real business need behind them. Like, for example, do first-time seller items sell better than experienced seller items? Do pink iPhones sell better than black iPhones? When Harper's Lee published her new books after, 30 years, did To Kill a Mockingbird also got an increase in sales? These are actually all concrete questions that we actually looked into in our data, and we actually answered them. And here is where R is really a great exploration tool is really useful to us. Our team make heavy use of R because in the particular stage of our job when we are worrying about what rather than how, is really try to get the question right, characterize the problem you're working on, learn about your data. These are real data, there's all kind of crazy stuff. Data that are wrong, data that are missing, data that don't make any sense. We have a lot of extra structured data in our information, and a lot of that is really difficult to understand. I mean, we have auction, we have fixed price, but 10 years ago we had something called Dutch auction that we never saw anymore on the site, but there's still some entry about them, or people who send items to themselves, or all kind of crazy things. So that's where we really cherish to have a tool with a flexibility and like R that enable us to learn more about what we're working on. And what is really critical, I'm an applied researcher, so I tend to hybrid kind of person. I have part of my job is science, understand what is going on. There are real user, real system going on out there, and I try to understand what actually happens. And the other part is more engineering part that I need to translate this understanding into concrete actions. So after you learn something, you want to do something with it. So, and in this phase, a lot of people tend to go in, my data is bigger than your data, and take as much data as you can, and don't even think about looking at anything at this scale unless you can have 1 terabyte per day of data and handle seamlessly. But I think it's a bit misguided. I mean, in the early stage, your ability to do progress is primarily dominated by your cycle time, how quickly you can try out new ideas. And the size of the data is actually working against you. And also in most of our job ends up being predictive model, for example. And predictive model needs to generalize. That automatically means that you can sample your data down, because if you need all the data, you never have all the data. Next week data, you don't have it, for example. And if you need all the data to make your thing work, it's never going to work, because you never had the data for next week, next time, so on. So intrinsically, if you want to have something practical, you need to be able to sample and get your job done. So in general, it's important to have access to a lot of data, but when you actually try to understand the thing, cut the data down. Try to preserve as much as possible your cycle time, because that's, again, is dominating your ability to do progress. Is how quickly you can try a new plotting, how quickly you can try a different approach, how quickly you can change your mind, how quickly you can narrow down, slice, dice your data in all kind of things. And this is critical. The ability to visualize things and is very, very important to us, because a lot of the understanding of our data is wrong. A lot of things we believe, like everybody in eBay is always know that most of the bids happen in the last minute. You actually look at the data, you find out it's not true. The median time is 24 hours. So half of your distribution is six days before the end of the bidding. 1 day, 3 days, 4 days. And this is stuff you learn, and you don't need an entire data set. Cut it down, do a random sampling, do stratified sampling, get clever. So this is all great. And in some sense, I kind of preach it to the choir here, because you all work and love and use R, so you should be well acquainted with these advantages. So, but the second part is, well, we do have large system, and those systems typically are not written in R. We have millions of search per seconds coming to the eBay servers. We have reverse indexes. We have data warehouse to handle the transactions. So these are large systems, and typically, they are implemented with different programming languages. They are C++ for the backend, for example, they're in Java, and they tend to prefer, it is important, the flexible to have the ability to limit how many dependencies you have in this production system. You want to make as simple as possible, to scale as good as possible. You want to be efficient in runtime performance. You want to be able to be embedded in a lot of different environments. And these are all things that work against you in R. R is great, but is a very comprehensive. There is a lot of moving pieces. It's a language that you typically don't use to run web servers or to create web services. It's not that it's wrong, but it just doesn't happen. So we really needed to find a way to bridge this gap. And as I said, most of our job when you go from the science part to the engineering part is really you need to capture your understanding of a process of something you want to do in executable in actions, and this takes frequently the form of predictive models. You want to predict whether a listing on eBay will sell or not. You want to assess the risk of a specific seller that may give rise to bad buyer experiences. You want to estimate the shipping time from a package that goes from Poland to US. And so typically the way it works is you collect your data, you train a model, and then you want to execute the model in production. And the important observation here that typically the training is done infrequently, and you can you can do that in R, but the execution of the model tend to be necessary to be much more in many different places. You want to be able to estimate how reliable a seller is at listing time when the seller goes and creates a new listing. You want to be able to decide which one is the best result for the specific search in real time on a million of documents. And that's where you would need to go from R to something else frequently. And here simplicity is the key. A lot of predictive models are quite easy. You can train a linear model, and once you know the coefficient, everybody can write a linear model execution, right? You just copy the coefficient and you compute, you do it. General linear model is also pretty easy. Support vector machine is a bit more complicated, but again, they're just inner product. Tree models tend to be a bit more complicated, still doable, but they're a bit more complicated. And this is the part that is interesting to us because this is the gradient boosted tree models. As trained by the GBM package is one of our favorite tools, or at least mine. And for several reasons, gradient boosted tree, anybody knows what I'm talking about when they talk gradient boosted trees? Tree classifier, tree prediction. Okay, essentially is a tree. Gradient boosted trees is a tree-based model or classifier or regression that gets improved through boosting. It's an ensemble method where we train a sequence of trees that correct each other and they work together as an ensemble to make good prediction. The reason why we like it is, first of all, is gradient boosted trees tend to have state-of-the-art performances level, so they tend to be best in class. They do not assume that the features are in a metric space. This is a bit subtle. For example, when you do a linear regression or when you do a support vector machine, whether you like it or not, you intrinsically assume that there is a metric between the feature and the feature space. Because when you think about support vector machine, you're maximizing the gap. The gap, the margin is defined as a distance. And the distance means that the X coordinate and the Y coordinate needs to be in a certain relationship. You assume a certain structure to the feature. Now, when I try to decide which one of this listing or this item is the best answer for this query, my features are, one is the price, one is how reliable the seller is, one is which day of the week you listed this thing, where how many clicks this thing. You know, you see, assuming that this feature in the same metric space is a bit not necessarily easy to justify, or an assumption that I'm not always ready to do. So. One of the great things of trees that they don't care. They're essentially translation invariant. They're insensitive to any monotonic transformation of your features. So I don't have to worry whether the relationship is linear or not, whether you need to take the log or something. So this is great because it means I just dump my feature as they are without worrying too much. And I know that the performance of the model will not depend on linear transformation or monotonic transformation of my feature. That's a great thing. As I was saying, can deal pretty well with nonlinearity and redundant variables. They tend to be pretty robust over fitting. And finally, a very important part is that they are understandable in the sense that gradient boosted trees models give us insight in which variables are important in the prediction job we're doing and how they affect the model. So what I mean is, please. 4 minutes left? Okay. I can do it. is that we can look what there is a way to open up the black box and see which variables are really important in your prediction model and what they're actually doing. And you can read the details. So this is really cool stuff. So how do we do it? Well, as I said, we cannot really run R in production on millions of documents. And so what we did is something relatively simple. Is the gradient boosted trees are encoded as an internal relationship inside of a list of R structures. And what we do, we just export them as a JSON document. And well, the format we essentially just made it up, but the important part is you want to preserve how you train your model on the left-hand side, essentially. You know, the name of the model, the features, the interaction, these are all the hyperparameters of the model, how many trees, etc., etc. And then, there are a sequence of trees which are pretty simple to encode in this case in JSON, where you say, okay, there is a condition, there is variable X3, and this is a categorical variable, and the first condition is that X3 should be in the set of DRC. And if it's true, we go to this other branch. If it's false, we go to the other branch. And also, if missing, because gradient booster 3 also handle missing variables, there is a third branch. So what we did is we wrote a relatively simple program that goes from our internal representation to an externalized JSON representation. And then after it's in JSON, pretty much any kind of language can handle JSON parsing, so it's straightforward. And now you have two ways. One, you can write an interpreter for this JSON structure. This is flexible and convenient. You can easily deploy new model as data in this case, which is very convenient. Or otherwise, like we do in production for the ranking function, we actually generate a C++ code. And then you just, at this point, the only dependency you just link into your production system and you have your model in production. So in conclusion is, I just want to say that R is a great tool, is independent of the size of your data exploration and be able to quickly try out new things is always important. So so I definitely encourage you to use. And also after you train the models in R, you might get all this question of, can you really use R in production? And the answer is yes. Typically you need to somehow export the final result of your R models in a way that you can then easily use in other environment. And that's not too difficult. And here is, if you want to use my crappy code to do this, you can find it on this. And we're actually working with, I talked to the GBM people to see whether they want to integrate into their model. And so the code is open source. You can use it and have fun with it. And I think that's it.
We do have time for one question, I think, or one or two brief questions. So let's see. I'm going to try the gentleman in the back there.
Yeah. I'm just kind of curious. You're looking into your JSON format. Are you aware of the PFA efforts that are creating basically people creating PMML, that decided that PMML is working?
So the question is about another initiative. I didn't quite get the initials of the new initiative.
PFA
as essentially an alternative to JSON. I see. So the question then would be essentially, is the speaker aware of PFA as an alternative to PMML, which seems to be broken?
I was aware of PMML when I was trying to do this. I worked for IBM for 8 years. I opened the spec and I saw that it was written by IBM and I said, okay, we'll never get this one done this way. So yeah, I'll say yes, I'm aware of the first part of the question. Essentially, no, PMML is not that bad, but for the trees bad is difficult because it's asymmetrical branching. So it's very difficult to preserve the structure of the tree or the in 2PMML. It was too complicated. So we just invented our own. And I learned about PFMA in this conference, and I will look into that. So I think, you know, simple standard are good, but there are so many of them.
Did you try, you know, there is a package called Error Insight to embed error code in C++, for example?
Yeah.
Is something that we do in production?
I haven't looked into that. In my case, the stress was really simplicity. The structure of a GBM tree is extremely simple. And so I wanted to preserve the simplicity. And also, having JSON is actually convenient because you can use tools like graphical tools that is not the same as you try to keep your model as code, right? Our code is difficult to parse, while JSON is trivial. And so if you want to have just doing producing reports or something about your tree, it's much easier if you just keep the non-executable part, but just the branching structure and so on.
Okay, so I apologize. We'll have to move on to the next speaker, but let's thank Alex once again for his presentation.